You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler, joining Paul Elizan Ostman. This is normally Tom Garcia's program, but Tom, for the summer, is going to be giving the program over to me, and this is going to be the American Hour, but instead of with Tom Garcia on Fridays, it'll be with Mike Cutler. And Paula, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing well. You're very welcome. It's 70 and partly sunny up here in Boston.
Well, we've got 77 and partly sunny here in New York. It's a lot better than the almost 100 degrees we had yesterday. But it's Friday, so no matter what the weather is, I'm sure that the folks out there are happy that today is Friday, TGIF. And, you know, as always, there's so much to talk about. For those of you who might be familiar with me, I am a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I've worked with state legislative bodies on immigration-related issues. And I want you folks out there to understand that immigration is not a conservative issue necessarily. And it's not a liberal issue. It's an American issue. It's about controlling our borders, making certain that our country does not let people into the country who do harm to us, whether they're criminals, whether they're terrorists, whether they're involved with narcotics, or whether they're, in fact, taking jobs that Americans desperately need. You know, if you've been following the way the economy has been tanking, we've got problems. The government claims that 9.1% of Americans are unemployed. Of course, they don't talk about people who've given up looking for work. They don't talk about people who are underemployed, maybe holding down two jobs and still not making the salaries that they used to make. We're looking at people losing their homes to foreclosure. We're losing our expectations of the American dream for our children. So this immigration issue really isn't a single issue, folks, but it's a major component to every challenge that confronts America today. And what I have done since 9/11, because as a New Yorker, the ashes from 9/11 landed on me, landed on my home, my family, my neighbors were killed. And as an INS agent, I've arrested terrorists. I was part of the drug task force for half of my 30-year career. And among the people we arrested were drug dealers, murderers, and people involved with international terrorism. So this isn't about keeping immigrants out of America. In fact, I'm the son of an immigrant. My mom came here from Poland ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandma, who died in the Holocaust. I'm all in favor of lawful immigration when the system has real integrity, when we know who we're letting in, when we're not letting people in who would do harm to us, which is what the purpose of the laws is. And those laws, by the way, are colorblind. They're blind about ethnicity, race, religion. It's purely about doing what's best for our country and best for our citizens. And both political parties got us into this mess. So it's become my mission, since 9/11 in particular, to try to take the expertise that I've acquired, and I hate to admit it, but it's 40 years just about since I got my badge. I started as an inspector at Kennedy Airport for the old INS. And then 4 years later, I became a special agent. So it's become my mission to try to educate our fellow Americans as to why immigration is such a big deal, why it does matter, why we need to have not only secure borders, but an immigration system that protects our country and has integrity so that we not only protect America and Americans, but we honor the countless millions of lawful immigrants who over the past 200-plus years came to America in accordance with law, built this country as did their descendants. That's the tradition of America, a vibrant, upwardly mobile, successful middle class where, as the saying goes, anybody could aspire to be president. We're losing that, and we need to do what we have to do as Americans to make certain that we get the politicians to listen to us. And a final thought before I tell you what's going on and chat with Paula. I want you to know that if you look at the First Amendment, folks, it talks about freedom of speech and it talks about freedom of the press, and it certainly does. But there's an expression in that First Amendment that a lot of people have forgotten. And it talks about the right to peaceably assemble. During the founding of this country, way back when, there was no technology. If you were going to peaceably assemble, you did so in person. People met under shade trees on a summer day. They met in barns. They met in churches. They met in synagogues. They met in schools. They met in people's homes. That's how we had discourse and debate and discussion, because that is at the heart of the democratic process. We have got to educate ourselves, enlighten ourselves. It's an obligation. The democratic process is not easy. It requires the commitment of the citizens of the country. We need to educate ourselves so that we can go to those politicians that are alleging that they represent us and confront them with the facts. Tell them what it is we expect of them, not unlike when you go to a restaurant and order a meal, not unlike when you go into a car dealership and order up a car. Nobody says to the salesman at a dealership, I don't care if the car is four doors, two doors, a stick shift, an automatic. Who cares? Put a car in my driveway. I'm happy with it. We don't do that. We don't go to restaurants and say to the waiter or waitress, throw some crap on the plate and I'll eat it. We're very specific. You know, I want a cheeseburger. I want it medium well. I like Swiss cheese, not American cheese. And we lay out what we want. Well, we need to be no less specific in dealing with our elected representatives. I believe that we have gotten ourselves into the mess that we're in today, folks, because far too many people have been ignorant, have been lazy, have been foolish, have been ignoring their own obligation to make their voices heard by people who are paid to represent us. How can they represent us if we don't tell them what we want? How can that waiter or waitress in a restaurant give you the meal that you want to eat if you don't tell them what you want to eat? This is common sense. We have Americans who are more concerned with who's winning the baseball games, what the standings are of the leagues, who's winning Dancing with the Stars, all kinds of trivial stuff. But the real important issues are being ignored by too many Americans, and that is how I believe we've come to be in the mess that we are in. What say you, Paula?
I don't think it's too good. I mean, I just saw in the news today that Alabama governor signed an immigration bill and the leftists are outraged.
They're out. And you know what's so funny? The leftists talk about workers' rights. Right? Workers' rights. You know, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He was my biggest hero. And I just drove by Ground Zero, by the way, folks. And I'm thrilled to tell you that work on that tower that will eventually be 1,776 feet tall is progressing. And those workers are out there and doing the hard work, backbreaking, dangerous work. You know, construction workers, by the way, suffer more injuries and fatalities than law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
When we hear these lies from the folks, oh, the illegals do the work Americans won't do. You go to a construction site. You go to see who works on those road crews. You look at who's working in the steel foundries and the coal mines. Those are Americans. They're busting their tails to support their families the way they've always done it. And if you look at the statistics, folks, Americans are the hardest working people on the face of the planet. We are the most productive. And now we hear the lies. Oh, if it weren't for the illegal aliens, who would do that work? Who would be willing to bust their backside? Tell you about another group of Americans that do dangerous, filthy, backbreaking work, the U.S. military. You look at our young men and women in the military. I don't care if they're in the Air Force, the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the Coast Guard. These folks go in harm's way as a matter of routine. Law enforcement officers, firefighters. We could draw up a list of all these tough, backbreaking, filthy, dangerous jobs that Americans do as a matter of routine. And then these folks who would not know an honest day's work if it jumped up and bit them on the nose or some other body part will say to you, well, you know, if it weren't for those illegal aliens, who would do the dangerous, dirty, backbreaking work? what's really happening, folks, is that we are importing, through illegal immigration, slave labor. People who are working for substandard wages under substandard conditions that if all of the factors about their employment were known, you'd find that most of them were working illegally, not just from an immigration perspective, but from the perspective of what the Labor Department requires, from the perspective of what OSHA, Occupation Safety Health Administration, requires, what the EPA requires. They're working in jobs in ways that defy belief. And this isn't conjecture. You know, we see the folks in the various think tanks, and they sit at their desks, and they conjure up numbers and statistics and so forth. Let me tell you what. For the first half of my career as an immigration agent, when I became an agent back in 1975, a lot of the people that I arrested were working in factories, sweatshops, farms, you name the locale. We were out there seeing firsthand the way that illegal aliens were being treated. It's modern slavery, modern-day slavery. There's a guy by the name of Homer Hickam who wrote a wonderful book. It became this movie, October Sky. The book was The Rocket Boys. He grew up in Colwood, West Virginia, a coal mining town. His dad was a coal miner. He's a couple years older than I am. And when Sputnik was launched in 1957, I was in public school. Homer Hickam was in high school. And it fired him up to start building model rockets. And you find out in this wonderful movie that ultimately he became a NASA engineer. But the reason I'm mentioning Homer Hickam was because of his dad being a coal miner, he was called upon to deliver the eulogy at the Sago mine tragedy about 3 or 4 years ago when a bunch of miners died in a cave-in in West Virginia. And I watched Homer Hickam deliver the eulogy, and it really choked me up. My dad died of lung cancer when he was 57 and I was 19. I carried my pop off his job physically. I had to help him off the job. He was that ill to his very last day at work. And I hung out with construction workers as a kid. And here was Homer Hickam talking about these coal miners who are very much cut from the same magnificent cloth as construction workers and blue-collar, hard-working Americans. And what did Hickam say? He said, "There's no water holier than the sweat off a man's brow." And I thought about my dad, and I thought about his buddies in the construction trades who were out there, whether it was 5 degrees above zero, whether it was 100 degrees outside. They went to work sick because they didn't get paid if they didn't do the day's work. And they're still working the same way. So when I heard those words of reverence for these people who have built this country and made America, America, the people that embody the can-do spirit that seems to be so lacking in Washington, so lacking in too many state capitals and city halls around the country. Today, for these politicians, it's not about can-do, it's can't-do with a BS explanation. And frankly, Paula, I'm tired of the explanations. The bottom line is, America became America because of the hard work, because of the dedication, because of the innovation and the creativity, because we as Americans looked at problems, looked at challenges, and what might have been mission impossible to the rest of the world was simply mission difficult for America. 40 years ago, we went to the moon because a president by the name of John F. Kennedy challenged this country to get men to the moon by the end of that decade, the 60s, and return them safely to the earth. He made that speech in 1961. And in 1969, we landed men on the moon. Not once, but a total of 6 missions landed men on the moon. 12 Americans walked on the lunar surface. I had the privilege of meeting some of those astronauts along the way, because next to my dad, the astronauts and test pilots were my biggest heroes. They really fired up my imagination. So, you know, we did it. When America was attacked at Pearl Harbor in 1941, it took us 44 months to win the war. America, working with its allies, built fleets of ships that had never existed before, fleets of aircraft that had never existed before, radar installations, bazookas, tanks. We even built 2 atom bombs with brand new technology, brand new, unproven. We did it. 44 months over. The world was declared safe once again for democracy. In 1993, we were attacked not once but twice by terrorists who came to this country from the Middle East, determined to kill Americans, and they did. A guy by the name of Amir Kantz, he stood outside CIA headquarters in January 1993 with an AK-47. And as the cars were driving into the compound carrying CIA officers, he opened fire. When the smoke settled, two were dead, three were badly wounded. Five people altogether shot by Kantz. He fled the country, which is what terrorists and transnational criminals do. They leave the United States. They're able to get out of Dodge. Our people tracked him down, brought him back here. We put him on trial. He was found guilty and executed. But the people who were dead were dead. The people who were wounded were wounded. And just a month after the attack on the Trade Center, at the CIA, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. Again, Middle Eastern terrorists who got visas by fraud, got amnesty by committing fraud. A guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima got amnesty as an agricultural worker. Where are we hearing this again? And what did he do? He lied on the application. Turned out that he drove a livery, a taxi cab, never worked on a farm, and the only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the basement of the World Trade Center that almost brought those towers down sideways. As it was, six people were killed, hundreds, perhaps thousands injured, and there was $500 million in damage inflicted on that once iconic feature of the lower Manhattan skyline. And what did we do? Everyone in law enforcement that I knew, I was assigned to DEA in those days, we thought, wow, finally they're going to get serious about immigration. The Clinton administration did nothing. In fact, they implemented a program called Citizenship USA. They pushed over 1 million applications for citizenship through the process. And after the fact, the GAO, the General Accountability Office, came in and said, you know, lots of those people that were given United States citizenship, the highest honor a nation can bestow upon a foreigner, an alien, is citizenship. Well, thousands of these people were ineligible to be given citizenship, but they were given it anyway. And this was in the wake of those two terrorist attacks. And then a gentleman by the name of Lamar Smith called upon me and several others to testify at a hearing in 97 about how it was that the immigration system had been gamed by these terrorists. Now, that was 18 years ago, almost 19 years ago that this happened. We still don't have secure borders. We had the attacks of 2001, 9/11. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. And here we are coming up on the 10th anniversary of that horrific attack, right? More than twice as much time has elapsed since 9/11 as it took us to win the Second World War. Doing the math quickly, what is it, about four or five times as much time since the attacks of 93 as compared with how long it took to win the Second World War. We still don't have a secure southern border. It's ridiculous to call it secure, but, of course, the president goes out there and says, well, you know, those folks won't be happy till we put a moat out there with alligators in it. Meanwhile, we just had another rancher shot to death just two or three days ago. I was watching Fox News today. Americans across the country are being killed by drug traffickers here in the United States. Napolitano, who heads up what I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, tells us that our borders have never been more secure. But by the way, it's like a good news, bad news joke. The good news, the border is secure. The bad news, somehow mystically, 230-odd American cities are now infested by members of the Mexican cartels.
Right,
the same
right.
Cartels that have killed 36,000 people in Mexico since Felipe Calderon took office. Is this crazy, Paula?
Well, it's crazy. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense at all.
Well, but you know, I was sent an interesting article, Paula. I want you to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Attorney General for Arizona, and you know, Arizona got sued by the federal government for daring to enforce immigration laws, and you know, I've provided a declaration to try to help them with the lawsuit, which is insane. Here's this headline. Horn, the Attorney General for Arizona, blasts the Obama administration for pushing for illegal aliens to vote. Because what's happened now is the Justice Department, the same Justice Department that would not investigate civil rights violations of Black Panthers who were trying to intimidate old white voters who went to vote several years ago, if you remember that fiasco, that disgusting situation. Well, now we have a situation where apparently the Justice Department is fighting with Arizona, saying, well, you don't have the right to ask for ID to make certain that people that cast ballots in elections are really authorized to vote in the United States. So maybe that's what this is about, folks. maybe this administration knows that they can't win the election fair and square. You know, the old joke about Chicago, you know, how many dead people vote. And here we go. Apparently, this is about allowing illegal aliens to be able to vote in the United States. So, of course, the illegals will vote for anybody who promises to give them lawful status in America. So when you look at the bigger picture, doesn't it start to make sense? Doesn't it start to seem, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I'm a Democrat. I'm not a conservative. I've been a Democrat my whole life. But I'm an American before I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
Believe me, I am. We all are supposed to be Americans before we see ourselves as being affiliated with political parties, which, by the way, Paul, one of the things that drives me nuts, and I'm sure you've seen it, a politician passes away, and then you hear the eulogy where they describe the candidate or the politician as either a great Democrat or a great Republican. What happened to great American?
Yeah, that's first and foremost.
Am I crazy? Shouldn't that be the first at the top of the list, great
what?
American? No, great Republican, great Democrat. Well, if you think your party comes ahead of the needs of this country, it's time for you to go home. That's my attitude. We need to be Americans first and foremost, folks, because that's what this is supposed to be about.
Definitely.
So anyway, we now have a president who's using, again, the Justice Department, just as he used them, to go after Arizona for daring to enforce immigration laws. And what do you expect Arizona to do? Do you know that they are averaging a home invasion or kidnapping every single day in just the city of Phoenix, which is the capital of Arizona? Beautiful town. I was there. And they're averaging a kidnapping or home invasion every day, primarily committed by illegal aliens who are involved with the drug trade. So Jan Brewer looked at the situation and said, well, you know what? This isn't acceptable. If I'm the governor, if I took an oath to uphold the laws of this state, to hold up the Constitution of the United States, then we start by enforcing the laws that are designed to keep people out of our country whose presence is harmful. So they enacted a law because they knew that the federal government doesn't want to enforce the law. They haven't wanted to enforce those laws for decades. Let's set the record straight. Back when Jimmy Carter was president, he ordered that immigration agents no longer use the term alien. We had to call them undocumented workers. Meanwhile, the term alien is not an insult. It just means any person who's not a citizen or national of the United States. Every other country uses comparable language. But Jimmy Carter saw in those massive numbers of illegal aliens, and they were relatively low compared with today, he said, you know, when we have a census, we don't want them arrested. They need to be counted. Because it was gerrymandering. It was the big cities where most of the illegal aliens lived, where most of the Democrat votes were. So if you had more numbers in those cities, then they would have more seats in Congress and more electoral votes that would line up with the Democratic candidate. It was an effort at gerrymandering. And then along comes Ronald Reagan, who wanted to deregulate the world, and airlines went bankrupt and so forth, and he gave us the first disastrous amnesty back in 86. So if you look at the succession of what has been going on for decades, this immigration crisis didn't start last Thursday. This has literally been decades in the making, and look at the price we're paying for it. Again, this isn't about being anti-immigrant. It's about keeping people out who want to do harm to us. Whether it's, and by the way, if you go to my website, which is michaelcutler.net, if you go to capsweb.org, I'm a senior fellow with Californians for Population Stabilization. They do a great job. But it's not just California. You know, as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. You'll see that I have listed in many of the articles I've written the specific law that lists the categories of aliens we're supposed to keep out of the United States. If you want to scratch this down, Title 8 of the United States Code, Section 212. You can punch that right into Google search and you'll see it, or you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. You can see my commentaries because I've given you a link to that section of law. When people say, oh, it's not a big deal, they're just running the border, they just want to be here. No, it is a big deal, because if you look at that list, it starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness, extreme mental illness, and are prone to violence, or they're pedophiles, or they're sex offenders, aliens who are convicted felons, who are involved with human trafficking, involved with narcotics smuggling, involved with gangs, involved with money laundering, involved with prostitution, involved with war crimes or human rights violations or espionage or terrorism. So you have to presume if a guy sneaks around and says, well, I'm not going to let them know I'm here, that that person falls into one or more categories of aliens who by law we're supposed to keep out of the country. That's the reason for the law. It's the same reason that they give you a peephole and a doorbell on the front door of your house with a lock. So when a stranger rings the bell, you can look through the peephole and say, gee, that guy looks kind of, he doesn't make me feel comfortable. I'm not going to let him into my house because I think he's a threat to my safety. Well, that's what the laws of the Immigration Act are supposed to do, to give our inspectors that opportunity to look through that peephole, which is what I did for the first 4 years of my career, to keep people out, not because they're the wrong color, because there is no such thing as wrong color. If you look at America today, America is the most diverse country probably on the planet, whether we want to talk about race, religion, or ethnicity. And I'm a New Yorker, which is really the most diverse city you could possibly imagine. So this isn't about keeping out people who aren't white. You know, in New York, I think I'm actually probably in the minority being a white guy. And that's fine. I don't care about race or religion or ethnicity. I do care about foreign nationals who want to come here and do harm to us. That's why we have those laws. Doesn't that make sense to you, Paula?
Yes, it does. It does. And, you know, we were watching the hearing on one of the links that you had sent me last evening. And unfortunately, I didn't get through the whole thing.
Well, I think I inundated you. You must have felt like you got hit by an avalanche.
No, you know what? It's good. It's good learning and it's good reading for me. And unfortunately, I can't find. Oh, all right. The Immigration Service policies, the one that you testified in March of 2002.
Right. That was an amazing hearing, by the way. Remember why they had that hearing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because of what happened on the terrorist attacks on 9/11, six months later, the two of the guys were. I mean, I had only gotten to maybe the first couple of minutes where Representative Sheila Jackson Lee started, you know, giving her spiel about what was going on. And
right.
It's a 2-hour hearing, and
yep.
If anybody wants to see something and understand why, you know, there's a lot of people that are very angry, they have to pick up this link on C-SPAN, and it's called The Immigration Service Policies from March 19th of 2002. The thing is awesome, and I haven't even gotten through all of it yet. It's a good listening, learning tool to understand what's going on with the immigration policy and why the implementations are putting in place as time is going on. Unfortunately, it wasn't done a long time ago.
But you know what? They still haven't addressed the issues because what triggered the hearing, it was really funny because you know this whole story about Wienergate. I jokingly have said that they need to stick a fork in that wiener, he's done. But, you know, he was my congressman. And I had just come from a parents' association meeting. I was the president of my daughter's school's parents' association. My daughter was in public school back then. And Wiener and other politicians were there, and he spoke, and I decided to corral him before he headed to the door. And my son had worked for him as an intern. And I said, well, here's a guy who knows me. I'm a constituent. This was after 9/11, almost exactly 6 months. We could still smell the stench from the burning jet fuel, and I don't even want to think what else was burning there. You know, the ashes landed on us. We stood outside my house. I'll never forget this on 9/11, Paula. And my neighbors were out of their houses crying. My wife stood there with me on the front lawn of our house. She said, my God, this reminds me of the scene from the crematorium in the movie Schindler's List. Do you think there's human remains in the ashes? I said, undoubtedly there are. And that night, I will never forget walking outside my home and seeing my neighbors wandering in the street looking like zombies. They didn't know where their children were. They didn't know where their husbands or their wives were. They didn't know where their parents or their brothers or their sisters or their girlfriends or their boyfriends or their best friends were. They had no idea what had happened. And it was startling. I mean, just everywhere we went, people were just standing there dazed and crying. Within days, yellow ribbons were tied to trees in my neighborhood. Almost every tree had a yellow ribbon tied to it. And cars started to drive by with photographs in the windows of those cars. And I want you to think about this, folks. Think about this on a human nature. You know, Joseph Stalin was one of the biggest monsters imaginable, but he had a very interesting quote. Stalin said that a million dead bodies was a statistic, but that one dead body was a tragedy. See, we get lost in the statistics. When we look at the Holocaust and we talk about 6 million Jews or 13 million people altogether, you can't relate to those numbers. You know, when I was a kid, my big thing was astronomy, and it still is. It's one of my real passions. And it's hard to wrap your brain around certain statistics or certain concepts. If I told you that I drove for 2 hours and covered 100 miles, you'd say, oh, yeah, Mike was driving an average of 50 miles an hour. I can relate to it. When you look at stars and they're, you know, light years away and a light year is 6 trillion miles and the numbers get to a point where you just can't fathom it, it's the same thing when we start talking about thousands of dead bodies. But if you look at each individual person who dies as a separate and discrete murder, I remember going to a Holocaust memorial and Alan Dershowitz, the famous constitutional lawyer, spoke. And he's brilliant. And he's an amazing orator. And you may not agree with all of his politics, and I don't either. But what he said made such sense. He said that if somebody kills a couple of people the way the world is today, the likelihood is great that they'll find him and punish him. But if you start to kill thousands or more, as the numbers go up, the likelihood of being arrested and prosecuted diminishes greatly. So we get lost in these numbers. So I want you to think about every one of those cars driving by with a picture of somebody who was very important to the person whose car that was. Think of the most important people in your life. Imagine, God forbid, something happening to them. You know, on a personal note, I've lost family members to cancer. And there are nights I still don't sleep. My parents died when I was in college over 40 years ago. And I still have terrible nights. My first wife died of breast cancer 25 years ago. And there are nights I just don't sleep. And I try to take comfort and I say, well, they were sick. We got the best doctors, the best hospitals. We just couldn't find a rabbit to pull out of the hat, so to speak. On 9/11, 3,000 healthy people who weren't test pilots, weren't race car drivers, weren't combat soldiers, some were firefighters and law enforcement, but the civilians weren't doing any particularly dangerous work, and not to diminish the death of a firefighter or police officer. Believe me, having been an agent, I lost friends along the way. We accepted that we took risks. But the way that these deaths happened were preventable if the Clinton administration had learned the lessons they should have learned after the attack of 93. And so we lost all these people. And now I have this argument with Weiner, and I said to him, you've got to help to do something to get the immigration laws enforced. You have to do what you need to do. And he said, I don't want to talk about it, Mr. Cutler. The schools that have these students from other countries are counting on those tuition fees. I said, yes, but some of those students, so-called, participated in the attacks. Didn't want to hear about it. I was furious. I walked out of that meeting with Weiner, and on my way home, Sheila Jackson Lee's counsel called me up, believe it or not, and said, Mr. Cutler, do you know that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, had just been granted authorization to change immigration status and change schools? And I said to this guy, I said, wait a moment. They're dead for 6 months. What are you telling me? He said, you're not aware of this? I said, no. And he laid out the whole situation. Now, I was home with a bad leg. I got injured executing arrest and search warrants with the FBI and the New York City Police Department. We were doing a drug raid when my knee blew out. It was the third time I hurt my dumb knee. I didn't have a leg to stand on, I guess. So I was home when all this was transpiring, and I had already testified for Tom Tancredo before the Immigration Reform Caucus 3 weeks after 9/11, or 4 weeks after 9/11. And so here I am talking to Sheila Jackson Lee's counsel, and I was astounded. I said, what do you mean they were given permission? He said, that's exactly what happened. Would you be willing to testify? And this is the hearing that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. 6 months to the day after 9/11, the incompetent Immigration and Naturalization Service turned around and gave these two dead terrorists authorization to change status. What does this tell you about of an abject lack of integrity to that whole process, Paula?
I don't have an answer for that, only because working for the Commonwealth for 6 years, I find it hard to believe that it was an oversight. It's hard for me to understand why that was done and how somewhere along the line someone didn't pick it up.
Well, I'll tell you what's even worse, and I don't know that you know this, and I'm willing to bet that some listeners out there don't know this, but if you want to be astounded, believe it or not, there was an article that ran in the Washington Post, and this detailed what happened in a GAO report back in 06. Incredibly, you know, when they divided up immigration and they merged it with customs and other agencies and created what I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, Citizenship and Immigration Services took on the responsibility for determining who should become a citizen of the United States and who should become a resident alien and so forth. They're kind of like the locksmiths. They hand out the key to the front door, because certainly citizenship is the key to the front door of America. And in fact, in the United States, the only two jobs that you cannot have if you're a naturalized citizen is to be president or vice president. But, you know, Henry Kissinger was in the chain of succession, and he was not born in the United States. So we don't make real distinctions about naturalized versus natural-born citizens. Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California, the most populous state. He was a naturalized citizen. So we're really handing out the keys to the front door. Well, this agency, Citizenship and Immigration Services, claimed to have lost, and you better put your seatbelt on for this number, 111,000 immigration files relating to applications that had been filed by aliens to get various immigration benefits, go to different schools, replace a lost alien card, acquire resident alien status, and 30,000 of those 111,000, those were applications that were filed for naturalization to become United States citizens. And USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services folks, adjudicated every single one of those 111,000 applications, including 30,000 people that they naturalized, but the adjudications officers did not have access to their files. Now, this came more than 5 years, or about 5 years, after the attacks of 9/11. How astonishing is that? Does that not take your breath away?
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say about it. It happens, I guess, huh?
Well, it's happening, and it keeps on happening.
Yeah.
And you know, that was why in 2007, when they tried to jam comprehensive immigration reform through the system, I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I testified before three House hearings about comprehensive reform. And I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times. And again, you can find these materials if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net. And I compared the hearings that not only I had testified at, but so many other people have testified at. I've compared those hearings with the countdown for the launch of the Space Shuttle Challenger. You know, they have that countdown so the experts can say, you know, go, no go, launch, don't launch. Well,
yeah.
The hearings are for the experts to come in and say whether or not they should go forward with the legislation. And I compared it to that because I said, think back when they launched Challenger on that cold winter morning in January of 86. Against the advice of some of their best engineers. They said it's too cold. And sure enough, they launched, and seven astronauts were obliterated along with the shuttle. And I said, so now it's not just seven astronaut lives, which was a big enough tragedy. It's every American life that's at stake. Because under these amnesty programs, whether it's the DREAM Act, whether it's comprehensive immigration reform, Citizenship and Immigration Services, the same agency that's inept, incompetent, and corrupt, would be put in charge of administering this program that would have to move, according to the last bill, 100,000 applications per day in addition to all the work they're supposed to be doing now that they're not doing well at all. And I gave it a more honest name. I said, look, if you're going to give people official identity documents and they're undocumented, you know, the other side says, oh, they're not illegal, they're undocumented. Okay, what undocumented means, folks, is they don't have a shred of paper in their pocket to prove who they are. Who are you? My name is Joe Smith. Can you prove it? Nope. How do we know you're Joe Smith? Would I lie to you? Well, do you think Muhammad Atta would lie? Do you think Marwan al-Shehhi would lie? Yeah, they did. Because in the aggregate, those 19 terrorists that slaughtered well over 3,000, and they say well over because people are still dying from their exposure to the toxins and so forth, I believe the last figure I read was that 16,000 people are still getting medical treatment for lung disease and all sorts of issues that resulted. They used over 300 false names.
Mm-hmm.
This is what bad guys do. That's why when you arrest somebody, the first thing you do is fingerprint them because you know you caught a fish, you just don't know which fish you caught.
Right.
So if you're going to give, God knows, and forget this 11 million number, if you believe 11 million, I have a fence to sell you. It's probably 30 or 40 million at this point. And you're going to give these people official identity documents based on who they claim they are? Who do you want to be today? They will put themselves in their own witness protection program, aided and abetted by our government. So I gave comprehensive immigration reform a more honest and descriptive name. I have come to call it, and I think you're going to like this, Paula, I call it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And in fact, Senator Sessions so much liked it, he quoted my article from the floor of the Senate on three separate days during the floor debate. I'm very proud of that. I got to hear him do it the last time. One of the 9/11 family members, a guy by the name of Bruce DeSell, whose son-in-law was slaughtered on 9/11, called me up and said, quick, put your TV on. I was sitting in my car at the time. My wife was doing some errands, and I was just sitting in the car listening to some music. And I said, look, Bruce, I can't. I'm in my car. So he held his telephone next to the TV so I could hear Senator Sessions quote me. And the insanity of minimizing the importance of immigration laws, the insanity that Governor Cuomo and other governors are saying, you know, we're not going to participate with immigration in the Secure Communities program. Well, the Secure Communities program is supposed to help ICE identify aliens who have been convicted of crimes, who are sitting in jail, so they could identify them, process them, bring them before an immigration judge, and have them deported from the United States. That's immigration law at its best, getting rid of criminal aliens. You know, I don't agree with the folks who say, oh, these poor people that are just working and they're desperate. I understand that they're desperate and so forth. I feel terrible for orphans, but we can't adopt every orphan in the orphanage, okay? We can't solve world poverty or world hunger by bringing all the world's poor here. The UN claims that over a billion people don't have safe water to drink or three square meals a day to eat. Can we bring a billion people here? I mean, look, we're having enough trouble taking care of our own. One in four or one in five American families today lives below the poverty line. I would even challenge that notion when you realize how expensive everything is. When you consider how many people are wondering how they're going to be able to afford fuel oil to heat their homes this coming winter, how they're going to be able to put a tank of gas in their car so they can go to a job to pay their bills. I mean, we're in deep trouble. It's not about being mean-spirited. It's about being realistic about things. But where criminals are concerned, I mean, how can you generate sympathy for convicted felons, rapists, bank robbers, murderers, drug dealers, you know? But you have Cuomo, you have other governors saying, oh, no, we're not going to allow these people to be deported. We're going to separate them from their families. That's not nice. How about the victims that die because they're killed by these people? ICE just put out a report, a news release, about how they returned a guy to Mexico who was wanted for a terrible murder. And then they included in that news release the statistics as to who it was that they've actually returned to their home countries recently. I mean, it was absolutely astonishing. I don't know if you saw the article, but they talked about the people that they had sent back to their home countries. And it was amazing. It was 585 people who were convicted of homicide in the United States, and they listed thousands of people that were arrested for sex offenses and thousands more who were convicted of serious drug trafficking charges. So why in blazes would some governor who supposedly represents the citizens of his state, like New York, which, by the way, suffered the worst on 9/11, turn around and say, well, you know what? I don't care about those immigration laws. If you want to be here, I want you to be here, and we're not going to let those mean ICE agents know about you. So when you get out of jail, yeah, you might commit more crime, but I want you back out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Could there be a bigger betrayal, not only of Americans, but you know where most of these thugs do their criminal activities, folks? I could tell you this from experience. I didn't read this somewhere. I didn't conduct a study. I saw it every day I went to work as an agent assigned to the drug task force. The transnational thugs, I don't care if it's the Russian mob, I don't care if it's the Jamaican drug posses, I don't care if it's the Asian organized crime groups like the Flying Dragons or the Ghost Shadows, I don't care if it's the Mexican cartels. They do it within the immigrant communities among the people of the same ethnicity. That's where they hide in plain sight. So if you think that this is somehow anti-immigrant to get the thugs out of the immigrant communities who are committing rape, murder, and mayhem, when you look at the houses of prostitution that we used to raid, because you have a lot of young men here, and of course Mexico is thrilled because they're getting over $20 billion a year in remittances from the illegal workers, and they're also doing something else, Paul. I don't know if you ever gave this thought, but most of the illegals who come to America to work are young, able-bodied men, which, by the way, that's the reason why the DREAM Act would go to age 35, because statistically, 90 or 95% of all illegal aliens in the United States are under age 35. If you ever wonder why they're saying age 35, that's the reason. This isn't about kids. This is about every illegal alien they can embrace. See, if they were talking about kids who are in school, they say, well, here's a guy, he's 18 years old, he's in high school, he's an honor student, and we just realized he's an illegal alien, we want to help him. I'd probably agree with it. I mean, within reason. But they're talking about up to age 35. So now you got to have a guy walk into immigration and say, well, I got out of high school 15 years ago, and I lost my report cards, but I went to high school. Okay, sign an affidavit here and tell us that that's the truth, that you would never lie to us. Believe it or not, I'm sure that's what they would do. Because do you know that the last amnesty, you know, we're all worried about MS-13, these violent gangs?
Yeah.
All that an alien who has been arrested and been involved with gang activity would have to do is sign a declaration that says, I hereby renounce my membership in MS-13. And then they're good to go.
Well,
I mean, is this...
Speaking of which... There's a media update that I just picked up. It's a press release from the Department of Homeland Security dated today, and it's from Tucson.
Go ahead.
It says, the following is a snapshot of certain Department of Homeland Security activities along the southwest border. And it's a rundown which provides a thumbnail of each incident.
Okay.
The Joint Field Command Statistics said yesterday, June the 9th, marijuana seized in pounds was 2,381. 106 individuals presented in federal court for prosecution. 69 individuals prosecuted under Operation Streamline, and 5 individuals were prosecuted on federal drug charges. And they say that the numbers only represent those apprehended by Border Patrol and presented for prosecution.
Right.
How
long a time period?
This was just yesterday, Michael.
Yesterday presented, or was this over a period of time, these presentations?
No, it says yesterday in Arizona.
Jeez.
Yesterday. This is a daily media update from
TucsonCitizen.com.
If I understand.
All right, now here's the deal. How many do they catch? How many do they not catch? And how many are declined because the U.S. attorney says we're just plumb out of resources? Because that happens a lot, folks, believe it or not.
Well, listen to what happened. On June the 9th, the AO Border Patrol Station All-Terrain Vehicle Unit discovered 14 bundles of marijuana abandoned in the desert northeast of Lukeville, Arizona. With assistance from a U.S. Customs and Border Protection helicopter, the marijuana, which weighed 710 pounds, had an estimated value of $355,000, and it was seized, of course.
Of course.
In February, CBP announced the Arizona Joint Field Command, an organizational realignment that brings together Border Patrol, Air and Marine, and field operations under a unified command structure to integrate CBP's border security, commercial enforcement, and trade facilitation missions to more effectively meet the unique challenges faced in the Arizona of operations. ICE promotes homeland security and public safety through the criminal and civil enforcement of federal laws governing border control, customs, trade, and immigration for the listeners that are not
right.
aware or understand what ICE does. ICE and CBP collaborate in investigations regarding the criminal organizations with a nexus to the border. Since launching the Southwest Border Initiative in March of 2009, the Obama administration has engaged in an unprecedented effort to bring focus and intensity to Southwest border security, coupled with a reinvigorated, smart, and effective approach to enforcing immigration laws in the interior of our country. That being said, this is just an article, and it's an article that will come out every day. It's the media update. But as long as the border is, there's still not enough individuals to patrol the border.
No, and by the way, I always make a point that any state that has a seaport or an international airport is a border state. You know, it's estimated that 40% of the illegal aliens in the country did not run the border. I testified before a congressional hearing about this. It's estimated that 40% did not run the border but came through ports of entry. Now, I want you to think about this. And this goes to other issues, the visa waiver program, all sorts of other problems in terms of how we're admitting people into the country. The government claims that there's about 4.5 to 5 million visa violators in the United States. On 9/11, five of the 19 hijackers were here as overstays. The others, they had all committed visa fraud. They all lied to the inspectors and so forth. But five were flat out illegal. A number of those five had interacted with the police days before 9/11 and were released. If immigration had taken them off the street, 9/11 couldn't have happened. But guess how many people are looking for what the government estimates is 4.5 to 5 million illegal aliens. I have friends inside the government who tell me that it might be double that number. Now, guess how many agents at ICE, because they do what's called interior enforcement. My job today would be with ICE. I was with INS, but I was doing interior enforcement in New York. How many agents, or the equivalent of agents in terms of man hours expended or agent hours expended, do you think are looking for those unknown millions of visa violators for the whole country?
Under 3 dozen.
Not quite that bad, but it's just under 300.
Okay.
But again, 300 agents on the hunt for what might be a population of 9 million.
Exactly.
And more arriving daily, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
More arriving daily. So when they talk about smart enforcement, I want to know what's smart about that. And I'm going to give you another question. Drugs, we know, is at the root cause of the violence in Mexico. It's costing our country hundreds of billions a year between money that's sent out of the country by the cartels, people that are killed, days lost from work, lost revenue, criminal incarceration of the bad guys. We can go on forever. It's estimated that 70 or 75% of all crime in America, directly or indirectly, is related to the drug trade. People who get high, drive a car, and kill somebody. People caught in a shootout by rival drug gangs. An addict who commits a crime to feed the habit and so forth. I mean, drugs are in the middle of it all. Now, how many commercials have you seen, Paula, about the fact that McDonald's or Burger King or whatever fast food place puts too much salt on the French fries? How much have we seen about that? Too much salt. We've got to cut down on salt. We've got obese children, right? Same thing with the soda pop.
Huh?
No, I'm saying same thing with soda pop. Too many sugar drinks. We're going to tax sweet drinks, right? This obsession about sugar, the obsession about salt. I don't know if it's the same way in Boston. Here in New York, almost every other day, that's what you're hearing about. Too much salt. They wanted to take Ronald McDonald away from McDonald's. They said, oh, my gosh, this isn't good because it attracts children to buy fast food, right? Big deal. When was the last time you saw a concerted effort by the government to go after the drug use, to talk about methamphetamine, to talk about cocaine, to talk about heroin, to talk about marijuana. When was the last time you saw a real concerted effort to win the hearts and minds of children and young people and say, stay away from this poison that's going to ruin your lives?
Well,
I haven't seen it in years. Have you?
Michael, I'll be honest with you. They go to the school. I don't know who goes, but once a year, someone shows up at the schools and discusses this. And each year that my son has gone through his grades, someone has showed up at the school to discuss drugs.
Do you think that that really discourages anybody once a year?
It does not, but it stems from the company that the child keeps and what is being taught to the child at home.
I agree. And look at the commercials on TV. How many pharmaceutical commercials do they run on TV? And don't you love when they tell you what the harmful effects might be from that stuff that they peddle?
Oh, my gosh.
And then you have the commercials right afterwards from the law firms who offered to sue the companies that sold you
right.
that rat poison in the first place.
This is why I don't take any medication.
Okay, neither do I, but here's the deal. We have a war on drugs, right? But there's more emphasis on the dangers of too much salt on your French fries or too much sugar in your coffee, and nothing being said about the threat to your well-being from narcotics. Isn't that an interesting... So you have a kid that comes home and he's a latchkey child because his mother is working, his father is trying to get a job, all kinds of chaos going on. So here's this kid. He's 11 years old. He comes into an empty house, turns on the TV. How many pharmaceutical commercials does he get to watch that tells him that whatever his problems are, there's some kind of chemical that could take care of it? How crazy is this?
Not many.
You know? Look, the bottom line, though, folks, well, you know, in all seriousness, our country's future hangs in the balance between the threat of these transnational gangs. You know, when you have gang members, they like to use graffiti to mark their turf. In Mexico, I'm sure you've seen this, they tend to kill people, chop their heads off, and hang bodies from bridges to mark their turf. These are the same thugs that are here. There was an article just a couple weeks ago in the Daily News, the New York Daily News, saying that the federal government is having a hell of a time combating Mexican cartels in New York City. And you have Napolitano, Nappy, is running around saying, well, the border has never been more secure. You know, this is like the captain in the Titanic saying, don't worry that the boat is listing 20 degrees. We're just trying something different today. Do you enjoy riding in a boat that's going sideways?
No.
I mean, that's what they're doing. The reality is that that border is not secure. The reality is that every day, tons of this garbage, these narcotics, whether it's marijuana, whether it's cocaine, whether it's heroin, they're hitting the streets. They're hitting the streets. So if the drugs are getting in and the criminals are coming here, I rest my case. If you're going to tell me that the boat is seaworthy, but we're up to our knees in water, I don't think that the boat is doing too well. That's
no,
the bottom line.
It hasn't been for quite some time, and I don't know if anybody else feels like it, but I feel that, you know, the government just they turn their head the other way and, oh, don't talk about it, don't.
No, because they're getting campaign contributions from these people. You know, when I was an agent, I couldn't take a cup of coffee on duty. And you have politicians bragging about being the best fundraiser. Paul, what do you think would happen to me if I went to my supervisor as a federal agent and said, Jim, you should be proud of me because, darn it, I'm the best fundraiser in the office? How quickly would I have wound up in front of a grand jury? And rightfully so. See, folks, again, apathy is where the problem lies. I'm glad you're listening to us today. And if you like the program, please tell your friends. I want to reach as many of our fellow Americans as possible. That's my mission. That's why I'm here. We do this as a volunteer. Paula doesn't get paid for this. I don't get paid for this. I am here because I am sick of the direction that America is going in. I have kids. I worry about their future. I worry about America's future. We just commemorated Memorial Day, the incredible sacrifices of our men and women in uniform throughout the founding of this nation. What did they fight for? Why do we have a military? Why do people go to war? They go to war to seize land. They go to war to change ideology. They go to war to take the resources, the assets of a country. Our country is abdicating its responsibility. Without a shot being fired, we're losing our country. So this is why I want you folks out there to commit yourself to contacting your elected representatives on all levels and make it clear to them, this isn't about being a Democrat or a Republican. This is about being an American. This is very important, folks. Take that extra 15 minutes. Get up from the TV. The baseball game will continue whether or not you're watching it. And you can always hit, you know, replay or whatever if you don't want to miss any of the action. But the real action is in Washington. The real action is in City Hall. The real action is in your state capitol. And we as Americans have an obligation to ourselves, to our children, to our veterans, to the men and women in the military who are out there right now, to do what we need to do to celebrate the democratic process by being involved. What do you think of that, Paula?
I think that's something that a lot of people should be doing. And it's not like I was telling someone yesterday that it's not that we're out of our minds crazy, you know, patriotic individuals. It's we just want people to be aware and to be alert and to understand and, you know, not just to look the other way when it comes time to vote and stand up for your, you know, for your rights and, you know, what's rightfully yours.
And you know, they have this wonderful campaign in New York. It's funny, they went after the Minutemen. Oh, my God, vigilantes. But they say, you know, if you see something, say something. Well,
Definitely. Let's
extend that to the politicians. If you see something, say something. If you think that that politician of yours is going off in the wrong direction, if you don't say anything, he or she is going to presume you're in agreement. And by the way, if you're one of those rare, fortunate few who really likes what your politician is doing, and there's a couple of those out there, then that person needs to be reassured that you stand with them. And you need to do this. You need to make that effort. The stakes are so high. America's challenges have never been greater. And at the end of the day, this is the responsibility that we as citizens of this great nation have. We have an obligation to be involved. You know, I always, when I write commentaries, like to end my commentary by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport. So this wonderful Friday afternoon, let me remind you all, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please get involved. Please make your voices heard. Please speak to your neighbors. You know, when I was a kid, they said, well, we should never talk politics and religion. Well, religion, I understand that, because that's the most personal relationship a human being can have, your relationship with God, how that is configured, if you have such a relationship, if you hold those beliefs, whatever. That's personal. But, folks, politics requires discussion. It should be civil, but it should be fact-based. It should be reason-based. We need to understand what is being done, what is not being done, and we need to make certain that our elected representatives come to understand that we are not as dumb as perhaps they had hoped that we are.
Definitely. And with that, Michael, we will wrap the final show up. Give you the
well, again,
final
thank you, folks. I'm just going to remind you, my website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net, or please go to CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. And Paula, thank you so much for joining me today. I wish you and everybody out there a fabulous weekend. I hope the weather gods smile upon us, and have a safe, enjoyable weekend, folks. And we'll see you again. Same time, same place, next Friday, 4 o'clock on USA Radio Network. Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Okay. Thank you, Paula.